Well, hello. My name is Apple, and I'd like to let you know that you're listening to Cider Chat.
Thanks a lot for stopping by, Apple, and bringing us into this episode number 95.
My pleasure, Rhea. I was so excited to hear that you're going to be doing all these episodes on palms in art.
Yeah, this week it's going to be with Renoir, and it's called Apples in a Dish.
And so was last week's piece with Cézanne. You know, the masters and I hung out quite a bit, setting up all those still lives.
You're a really good, I guess you would say, apple model, because without you just, well, sitting in the bowl or on the table, we wouldn't have all these awesome still lives. And even today, people look to palms for inspiration and for form. So thanks again.
It's just part of being an apple. Now, good luck, Rhea. And I gotta go because, you know, it's harvest season out there and the apples are quite busy. Oh, and please tell the talking palms that I said hi.
Will do, Apple. Take care, and we'll talk to you soon. Wasn't that neat? I love Apple every time, you know, Apple gets the opportunity to stop in, which, you know, is kind of tough because it's, well, it's busy all over the world. But there you go, bringing us into this week's podcast. And by the way, hello, and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the Cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade around the world. And this week, like Apple was saying, we are going to be doing our second installation of Palms in Art, featuring Pierre-Auguste Renoir. We'll get to that in a moment. And the main chat is going to be on cider making, the basics of cider making, bringing you kind of through like the 1, 2, 3 steps that you need to get it rolling, because right now in the Northern Hemisphere, the cider making scene is bubbling over. There is so much excitement in Ciderville. It's just blowing my mind. And one of the big things is that people are really kind of starting to get the momentum, the excitement, not just because it's a harvest and, you know, we're already in it. Those of us who are cider geeks and totally blown out by it, we're already in it. But it's the new folks who never really looked at cider before that's really inspiring me. And one guy by the name of Nathan, who is a podcaster himself, he has a podcast on beer called Micro Brewer. I'll put a link in the show notes to that. He got married, and his wife is gluten intolerant. So guess what Nathan is making? And the best part is he's so positive about it. So he's been doing this wonderful technique called batonnage. It's where you ferment the cider, and you leave it on the lees, and you stir it in. It's a technique that was brought out by, primarily used in white wine making. And then Zach posted on that little Facebook post too. It's from April 7th. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to pin it to the top of the Facebook page because we're in the middle of cider making right now. And maybe you'd like to try this too. Like Nathan, who, you know, I don't know how this happens, but you can indeed feel enthusiasm that is contagious via the virtual reality. And you got to love that. Because we might not all be able to sit down and have a glass together, but by this podcast and all the social media, we stay connected. And that's really what it's about because, shoot, you know, years ago, it felt really, really lonely in Ciderville. And now it's just such a fun party to be part of.
You gotta grab that luchi. You gotta bust that thing. Get your kicks on the street. Gotta kick back, step back. Oh, you gots to skeet. pizza, rat-a-tat-a, 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 bala, rat-a-tat-a, 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 holla. I don't want to be pushed like I do the push, yeah. When it comes to the cheddar, keep it under the cushion, yeah. I don't want to be ganked like I do the gank, yeah. When it comes to the cake, be me, you think, yeah. I don't want to be pushed like I do the push, yeah. When it comes to the cheddar, keep it under the cushion, yeah. I don't want to be ganked like I do the gank, yeah. When it comes to the cake, be me, you think, yeah.
Oh yeah, I need a little bit of a funk my soul. yeah. Well, all right. So that was good news, right? We like hearing that about Nathan. I like the conversations I'm having out there with folks that I'm meeting and friends and family I've known for a long time who are getting turned on to cider. That's good news. But there's something that happened that really blew my mind last week, and I'm going to need a little bit of help with it. So here it is. Happened back in July. I've said a couple times that, you know, there is some stuff coming up here. I can't really mention it yet because I don't really like saying anything until it's like it's real. And it's real because I was approached by a publishing company that has a book series called America Through Time. And they do these picture books. They do them on different towns in America and different kind of like trains or military stuff and a very focused topic. And the publishing houses asked me to do a book on cider. So I'm going to do a picture book on cider through America, beginning from colonial time all the way to present day. It's going to be photos and paintings. Talk about the Palms and Art piece, right? Perfect timing. How did that happen? I mean, I didn't even like plan for that. That just kind of happened. That's the magic of Ciderville. And of course, writing a bit of a script there. And I got to get it done this winter. So I'm going to be talking about this a lot on the podcast, asking you, Ciderville, if you have photos, old photos or present day photos that you think really depict cider in America, please send them my way to Rhea@ciderchat.com. I want to represent all of America, and I'm going to be, you know, doing this out of my pocket because there's no advanced book things. That just doesn't happen. I mean, that would be cool if it did, but, you know, I'm a podcaster. I'm not a famous author. So I do hope, though, that this book helps bring cider on the map one more level. I'm super, super excited about that. And actually, to top it off, crazy as it sounds, the publishing house also asked me to do one on beer. So it's going to be, wow, what a wild, wild winter. I'm going to do cider in America and also beer in America, both from colonial to present day. Not many days that you get an email that comes in and it says, we want to do two books with you. So there you have it. And just so you know, I actually already have a book, but it's a nonfiction on my current work. So I've authored that, but this is the kind of project that is just a dream come true. So, so thrilled. So if you have some photos, please do get in touch with me. And let's see what we could bring out there from the corners of America. And maybe you're an expat living somewhere else and you have a cool photo of your grandfather or grandmother with apples or barrels or a cider press. These are things that we really want to get and get that story set up. So I'm probably going to ring your ear off on it, but this is good news. Good news for the U.S. Specifically, because it is another feather in the cap of American cider makers and commercial and non-commercial, because the non-commercial makers really kind of held that for so many years until it became legal to do that like commercially again. So wow, oh, zao, that is good news indeed. And it's all about cider going up. And And what goes up comes down off of the apple trees. And I'm talking about nice, juicy apples. May they be cider apples or culinary or whatever you have. You know, you can make cider. So this week's episode is going to be a little bit on basic cider making. And I've taught this workshop for a long time, and I thought, you know, there is no better time than right now in September to get it rolling for folks out there who are just thinking, can I do this? And yes, you can. You could definitely do this. So we're going to go through it, and you could also look to the show notes, so you don't have to write this down while you're driving or writing or whatever you're doing. Just go there, and you'll be able to see a list of the equipment. Now, if you are a commercial cider maker listening, you might be thinking, oh man, I don't need to listen to this. But if you think about it, probably the one thing you have to answer most often is, how do you make cider? What is it? And those who have listened to the podcast for a while now know that I've asked many guests to describe it. And they'll be kind of going back and forth and not really sure how to say what cider is. And that's a little bit troubling, because if you're making a product, you got to know exactly how to say it. So I call that being in the beginner's mind. And it is something that I feel that if you are a professional in a certain area, you should really know how to describe that in the most simplest terms. It serves no one to be really complex. So maybe you are a commercial maker listening, and I know that there's a lot of them out there. Perhaps this will give you a bit of inspiration, hopefully, on honing down how you describe cider making to others. And if you are just like me, who likes to make cider at home, or just like me oh so many years ago who thought, I want to make cider but I don't know how, well, this episode is especially for you. So let's get into it now. Whenever folks ask me what is cider, I would say it's a cousin to beer and wine, a long forgotten cousin that has finally resurfaced after a long journey away. And that worked. You know, folks like stories like that. It makes sense. And if they ask me a little bit more, I would simply say it is fresh pressed apple juice that is fermented. Period. We're going to first begin with the most basic way that you can make cider today, with a gallon jug of fresh pressed apple juice. Before we talk about the juice, let's go through your equipment needs. There's two things you're going to need before you get started. You're going to want to get a rubber stopper with a hole in the center. Make sure that there's a hole in the center, otherwise you're going to have to borrow a drill and a drill bit and make a hole in there. Now, you don't want to do that. That's not a good thing to do. You get these rubber stoppers at a homebrew shop and say you need it for a gallon jug. What's going to go into that hole is what is called an airlock. And the airlock is this really cool and nifty thing that you fill with water like halfway. So the water on both sides of the airlock is even. And there's two different kinds of airlocks. Primarily, there is an S-shaped lock, airlock, and then there's a three-piece fermenter. I find the S-shape is really the best because I always lose the three-piece fermenter pieces. So, you know, if somebody throws you a three-piece, take it, but go for the S-shape. That's really, really easy. And you just fill that up with water, and you're going to put that in the stopper. And it should be sterilized water. That means heat it up or get distilled water. Or when you have nothing else, throw in a little bit of vodka. That works too, because that's really sterile. And of course, you want to keep it clean. So the two things you need, rubber stopper and an airlock. Fill the airlock with water halfway. Okay, so on either side of the airlock, you can see it halfway. Then you're going to get your jug that you got at a cider house. You want to get unpasteurized cider if possible. If it has had UV sterilization, that's okay. You could deal with it. But really watch out for the mass-produced cider that you would get at a large grocery store, because typically there are additives to that that can kind of retard the cider from fully fermenting. And if you're a super geek and you want to see that, just go to the show notes and you'll see what you might find in pasteurized cider that would affect your fermentation. But for those of us, we don't care about that. Try to get good apple juice. If you can press it on your own, cool. But if you can't, just go to a cider house and grab it. In the fall is the time that they start pressing. So you got the cider, you've got your rubber stopper that you put in there with your airlock, and now you're essentially good to go. All you need to do is take that jug out of the refrigerator because it's going to be too cold, and you want it at an ambient temperature of about 60 degrees. And you can let it ferment, and now you're going to have a wild fermentation. That's it. And it might become a little bit funky, but actually, I kind of like that. Now, let's rev it up. We'll up the ante a little bit. You could, with that cider, stop the natural yeast that are in that fresh pressed juice and pitch. This is called pitching the yeast, like you pitch it into the cider and get a cultured yeast. So that could happen, but that is another level up. For the most part, all you need is that jug, that stopper, and the airlock. You let it ferment, and it's going to probably start fermenting pretty quickly once you take it out of the refrigerator and have it in a dark, kind of cool area. And in about a week and a half time, maybe even less, you're going to see a separation of the heavy precipitants that are in the juice dropping down to the bottom, and the juice on top is going to get liquid. Beforehand, you're going to see that airlock kind of bubbling because all the CO2 is being released there. And just let it do its thing. You don't even need to have all the other technical gear. Let it do its thing as all what we call the schmutz kind of collects on the bottom eventually and the airlock stops. What is best to do is pour off that juice, kind of like decant it from the schmutz on the bottom into another vessel. And truthfully, you could start drinking it then. You know, you could try it, see how it tastes. It might taste a little tart, might taste a little bit funky, but that is the beginning of cider making. It's super easy peasy. So just kind of mull on that. And when we come right back, we're going to now up the ante and talk about pitching yeast, what kind of yeast to use, and some further tools you might need to make another batch of cider that has a little bit more control, and you get to dictate exactly what kind of profile you would like. So stay tuned for that. A lot of people do make 1 gallon batches of cider, and they do that quite well. So if that's all you want to do, that's great. But if we're going to up the amount that we want to make and bring it to a standard level, we're going to have to make a choice. And that choice is often dependent upon what you can lift. I know that sounds a little bit silly, like what? What do you mean? Are we talking about lifting the pint of cider? No, what I'm talking about is lifting the vessel of cider. Because I'm going to recommend to you that if you start making larger quantities of cider, that you use a glass carboy. And a carboy is, it looks like the water cooler tank of water that you have that flips upside down, that plastic jug, only it's made out of glass. And because it's made out of glass, the glass alone can be like 1 to 2 pounds. And the typical sizes that you could get are a 3 gallon glass carboy and a 5 gallon glass carboy. You could also get a 6 gallon glass carboy, and I have a 20 gallon glass carboy that I should probably make into an aquarium. I haven't yet. I'm planning to use it for cider, but it just shows you, you know, there are a lot of different sizes. Gallon sizes is how it comes into play. But consider this. A 3-gallon glass carboy filled with cider is going to weigh approximately upwards to like 25 pounds. Now, for the most part, that's pretty doable for me. You consider it in terms of the calculation being 7 pounds per liquid volume, a gallon of liquid. So 7 times 3 is 21. Add a couple pounds in there for the glass carboy, and it's easily going to be at between 21 to 25 pounds. If you go for a 5-gallon glass carboy, you go 5 times 7 is 35. So that's 35 pounds right there, including the glass, can go upwards to 35 to 38 pounds, if not a little bit higher. And that's where it starts getting a little bit harder to do. Back in the day, I didn't think about it. I would hoist that around. Well, I shouldn't say that. It was always difficult for me hoisting around a 5-gallon carboy. It's heavy. And those little buggers, you put them on the floor and you don't have something there like a concrete floor, and all you need is a little speck of glass, of dirt, and that glass can pop. And I have seen some very sad folks who have just filled it up, fermented it, ready to bottle it, and they put it on the floor and it shatters, and it's a sad day. So you got to be careful with glass, but the reason why we like it is, one, it sanitizes really well, and it doesn't transfer any kind of properties into the cider, any kind of like plasticky kind of taste. So that's just something to think about. And of course, there's other things that plastic has too that's not always so great. Folks do it quite a bit. I've done it myself, where they ferment into like a 5-gallon bucket with a cover on top for the airlock and the rubber stopper. I've done it, but it's not choice. So if you could get glass, do it. That always seems like there's glass carboys for sale on Craigslist or something like that, if you want to hunt that down. So again, here's our equipment list. You're going to need to decide, do you want 3 gallons or 5 gallons? We're going to go right now, for our purposes, we're going to go a little bit higher, because I know out there in Ciderville, folks are very enthusiastic. So we're going to kind of believe that you're going to do 5 gallons. But this recipe, it won't matter for the most part. So you get your glass carboy, but the truth is you're going to need 2 carboys, because at a certain point, you're going to have to transfer that cider into a secondary carboy. So you might as well, from the get-go, get 2 glass carboys. That's the first thing you're going to need. Let me go to my show notes here and go down. Oh, you should know that. How much does it cost? Well, it could be anywhere from $20 to $30 for each carboy. So, you know, that's a little chunk of change there to start off with. But do know it will last you a long time. You're going to want a rubber stopper. I recommend getting 2, because one might bounce on the floor and go underneath the couch or get lost somewhere, and then it'd be like, where's my stopper? Now what am I going to do? So get 2. You know, it's always good to have a backup. I mean, do you drive your car down the highway without an extra tire? You probably wouldn't. Kind of consider that rubber stopper being your extra tire. All right, so you get your rubber stopper. You have to make sure it's going to be the right size to fit your carboy. So have your homebrew shop set you up. You're going to want to have at least 1 airlock. Remember, I talked about that earlier. You could get an S-shaped airlock. Another key ingredient that you're going to need, and it is an ingredient, so it's not really an equipment need, it's an ingredient need before you get your cider going, is what is called a Camden tablet. They come in little vials. You get a whole bunch per like lot. And you're going to add that to your cider before you add your yeast. And essentially it is sodium metabisulfite. And what that sodium metabisulfite does is it retards the yeast that is in your fresh pressed apple juice from becoming vigorous and taking over. And it gives the yeast that you're going to pitch, the cultured yeast that you chose and said, I want to make a cider like this, it's going to help that yeast take over and get a running start. and really set the path and the course that you want that cider to take. So if that's what you want, definitely get some sodium metabisulfite. You could either get it in a powder form or get it as a tablet form, and those are called Camden tablets. It's spelled Camp Den, like a den that you go sit in and read books and smoke a pipe. I probably shouldn't do that, but you know what I'm saying. Anyways, the way you measure that is one tablet per gallon of juice. It's pretty easy peasy. And the thing is that once you actually are ready to go and you pour your cider into your vessel, your 3 gallon or 5 gallon vessel, you're going to pop in, let's say you have 5 gallons, you're going to pop in 5 of these tablets. Don't just pop them in though, crush them up. Have like a little mortar and pestle and crush them up, maybe mix them in a little bit of cider or the juice you have there, and then pour it in. That's much better than popping in the actual tablet. Don't do that. Avoid that if you can. If you do, don't freak out. Just let it be. It's going to be okay. It will eventually dissolve, I'm sure. You're going to then wait about 24, maybe you could even wait up to 36 hours before you then pitch your yeast. So let's say you got your juice and you popped in your tablets, but you're like, oh my gosh, I forgot to get my yeast. What am I going to do? You have some time. You could go out that evening or the next day and go down to your favorite homebrew shop and get your yeast. So there is forgiveness in Ciderville. Don't worry about that. Next up, we're going to be talking about the yeast. Oh, next is the yeast. And I love talking about yeast. It's so much fun because the yeast really dictates what your cider will take in terms of the direction of the taste profile. Certainly the apples do that, but the yeast have a lot to do with that too. So let's keep it really simple. Yeast comes in two forms, a liquid vial, which could cost about $10 or more, or a little tiny square package of 5 grams of yeast, and it's dry. And you just kind of, all you'll have to do is kind of rip open that package and pour it into your juice that's going to be in the carboy. That's it. So you're going to either get it in dry form, which could cost anywhere from 99 cents to $5, or the liquid form. That's up to you. I'm going to give you a couple options of yeast to get. The one that I used last year, and I really like the way it came out, is called Cider House Select. I think this is a great beginner's yeast package to get. You get 3 packs online via Amazon for about $2.50 a pack. That's not too bad. And it will, your cider will ferment dry, but it'll be a nice, easy drinking cider. Another nice, easy drinking cider and yeast that goes with that is called 71B. And I'll also have a link to that. Or you could try an English cider yeast. Those are 3 yeasts there. You could also try M2. And the M2, like the 71B, it's like this like letter and number thing that sounds really confusing, that some geeky cider, or not a cider, but yeast scientists set up. And it can make it a little confusing for us because, you know, it's hard enough for me to remember my cell phone number, never mind a yeast number. But there you have it. So I have 4 different selections on the show notes. You could check out those yeast and you'd be good to go. You want to make sure you have that before you get your juice. One more item that you want to get before we talk about the juice is some clear food safe tubing that you're going to want to have on hand, because in 1 week to 2 weeks time, you're going to go through your primary fermentation and need to transfer that cider from one vessel into the other. So you might as well get your tubing beforehand, because you don't want to be picking up that big old heavy carboy and pouring it into the other vessel. So you want to get clear tubing. I recommend about 1/2 inch diameter. You could get that at your homebrew shop. And the other thing that would be kind of good to have is a funnel. and they have specific funnels just for a carboy. It's a nice wide, again, food safety funnel, and you sometimes will get the screen that will, as you're pouring your cider in, if there's any bugs, God forbid, going into that, it will like separate that out. So a funnel and some rubber tubing, really good to have, because it's hard because you have that little tiny top or opening of the carboy, and pouring juice in there is not so easy. So make sure you have that funnel and rubber tubing. And then, and really only then should you get your juice. And let's talk about the juice, because it's oh so important. You want to make sure, if possible, that you get juice that doesn't have a lot of other junk in it. And that's typically juice that you would get at a grocery store that would have, oh man, stuff that just basically also will affect all, not only the flavor, but the yeast as you're going along. If you want to totally geek out, just go to the show notes and you'll get to see what would be inside some pasteurized juice. I recommend, if you can, to avoid that. If you can't, if that's all you have, if you live somewhere in the world where you can only get juice out of a grocery store, just do it. It's gonna be okay. Really, it's gonna be okay. If you have the option, though, to go to a cider house and get a cider blend specific for cider making, do that. And most preferably, get it unpasteurized. And don't worry about it, because you're going to be fermenting it and creating a libation. It's going to have some level of alcohol in it, and that will kind of deal with any kind of concerns that you'd have, whether it's pasteurized or not. So that's a really good thing to go to a cider house. Start hunting that down now in your area. Ask people, ask far and wide, and see when people are pressing, and show up there with, hopefully, your glass carboy, and you can pour it directly in, versus bringing in home a whole bunch of plastic jugs. That won't be really good for anything except the landfill, and we don't want to fill that up. When you're transferring your glass vessel, I recommend putting it in something like a little plastic milk square container. I think that's what it's called. Man, I can't remember what it's called. It's kind of like a plastic container that you could actually fit the whole carboy in there. And you'll be good to go. I normally cover my carboy going to a cider house. I cover it with a clean little plastic bag and rubber, just a rubber band. And that holds it and holds the juice as it's rocking in the car. I do not use my airlock at that point. Okay, so we have our juice and we have all our equipment. We went to the cider house, we picked it up, and we bring our juice home. What are we going to do? Well, the cider geeks out there are going to be thinking, check the specific gravity, check the specific gravity. And the only way you could do that is, well, if the cider house that you bought the juice from tells you what the specific gravity is, or if you have a hydrometer. So you might need that tool if you really want to go that route. But the truth is, I have made cider for years without giving a hoot about the specific gravity. And the way that you check that, again, is by having this little tool called a hydrometer. And the specific gravity tells you the density of, like, the sugar in the water. Because pure water, if you measure it, it has a specific gravity of one, basically. But if there's sugar in water, and typically cider has, at the minimum, a specific gravity of 1.045. And I kind of figure that most of the cider that I at least get are cider blends. And so they're going to have a much higher specific gravity of 1.045. They'll go much higher than that. So if you want to put the money into it, get a hydrometer. Get that before you get your juice and you're going to be pitching the yeast. That could be a good idea. But if you want to save some money, don't sweat it. Your cider is still going to be okay. Just to follow up with the hydrometer, though, once you check that liquid before you pitch the yeast, and you will see the reading on there for the specific gravity. It shows you right on the hydrometer. It just floats in a little long cylinder, this long stem looking thermometer thingy. That's a hydrometer. It floats in there and it rises up and it tells you where the specific gravity is. It's where the point of the liquid touches the hydrometer at the very top, and that is your reading. You know that your fermentation has completed once the specific gravity goes down to 1.005, almost at 1. And when it drops down to that point, that you know that you are good. So the end is near when it's dropping down, because the sugar is being converted to alcohol. And that's what happens. But if you don't have that, really don't sweat it. I mean, for years and years, I never even worried about specific gravity. I just kind of just winged it and it came out okay. So we get home. Maybe we check the specific gravity if we have a hydrometer. Maybe we don't. We bring it home. We make sure everything is sanitized. We make sure that our little yeast packet is kind of clean and the outside of the carboy is clean. And we take off that little plastic bag, and we are now able to pitch the yeast. So you're essentially going to pour the yeast into your carboy, and then you put on your rubber stopper with the airlock, and the airlock is filled with water halfway. Remember, halfway on either side of the two little sides of the airlock. And you just close it up and let it begin to ferment. You should typically see the fermentation begin by the airlock pushing out the little bubbles of CO2, and you'll hear it going bloop, 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 bloop. And that's the sound that you always hear in the Cider Chat theme music. You hear a little bit of bubbling in the background because I recorded my own carboys doing that, the airlocks. And you want to now focus on temperature. Temperature is really, really key with making cider. You want to keep it around 60 degrees. Avoid going over 75 degrees. Don't think it's a good idea. You want a nice, slow fermentation. If you have a cellar, that would be awesome. If you don't have a cellar, then you do the best you can. It's going to take about a week and a half, 2 weeks to complete fermentation. How do you know that? Well, when the airlock has stopped and the vigorous fermentation has ceased, so you're not seeing bubbles on top of the cider that's in the carboy. It's looking like things have slowed down. You could have taken a reading again and seen that it's dropped, but just look at your carboy and see, get a sense of that. And you'll also see the lees on the bottom of the vessel, or what I typically call the schmutz. What you're going to need to do within 2 weeks, 3 weeks, top 4 weeks, you're kind of pushing it. You want to, what is called, rack that cider over into another vessel. So now that rubber tubing comes in very handy. That rubber tubing, actually with a stiff piece of tubing, which allows you to put it all the way into the bottom of your glass carboy, straight in without having the tubing get all bent, is best. And you're going to siphon it from one vessel into the other. And of course, you're going to have some airspace. Airspace is very important at this stage, which is called the secondary fermentation stage. And you're going to just have to stay tuned for that. I'll talk more in a couple weeks once you get your cider. So expect the next episode that I'll be talking about secondary fermentation coming up probably in October. So I'll revisit this again. But for the most part, if you've racked it over into that secondary vessel, you want at the minimum about a half inch of airspace between your rubber stopper and the cider. So at the very top. If you have more airspace, you are allowing a contact to oxygen, and that essentially oxidizes your cider, and it doesn't taste good. It'll taste like cardboard, and you don't want that. You've worked too hard for it up to this point. So let's say you've racked it over from the primary into the secondary. That's what typical of the term is you have the primary fermentation. You just brought it home. It does its thing with the yeast. And now you're going to go secondary, which is basically going to be conditioning the cider. When you do that, there's going to be that schmutz on the bottom that you're not going to carry over. So you're going to lose some of the volume. What do you do there? I recommend filling that with cider. Get some store-bought cider, something that's inexpensive but that you like to taste. Or you go for something more expensive, but something kind of innocuous that isn't going to overwhelm it. Mainly, you're trying to get something that is sanitized in there and won't reinvigorate the yeast so that you could fill it up to volume again and keep that small gap of airspace up there. The less airspace, the better. And let that sit. I let it sit, and typically more precipitants will drop down to the bottom, and I'll rack again. In total, I rack typically for a 5-gallon batch of cider up to 4 times before I look to bottling it. And maybe sometimes right before I bottle it, I rack it one more time. And each time I'm using clean vessels that I'm racking into. What do you clean those vessels with? Besides hot water, you could use a cleaning solution. I use IO4, which is like an iodine solution, and that works really well for me. I find it the least expensive. It's what I've been using for years. Again, I'll have a link in the show notes to that. And that's about it. You're good to go. If you want to keep it simple, just grab a jug and let it ferment in your refrigerator. As soon as it starts expanding, you know it's starting to ferment. If you add an airlock to it, you're good to go. But if you want to go to the 3-gallon or 5-gallon vessels, you're going to have to think about it and be prepared. And it's kind of like a prepared cider maker is a happy cider maker, because there's nothing better than having all the tools that you need at hand, all set up and clean, and be able to pitch the yeast at the time you need to do that, and feeling secure that the cider that you're going to now make is in the direction you want to go. And that's where we always take it in Ciderville. We keep on going in the direction of up, 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 and keeping it positive. I hope this was helpful. It certainly taxed my cider making info and trying to keep it as simple as possible. Of course, we have a zillion amazing people here, makers from around the world, who could really give you more technical skills. But there's so many of us out there in Ciderville who just want to keep it simple, and this will get you there. So have fun. And before you know it, you will be making cider. When we return, we're going to be showcasing our artist of this podcast, which is Renoir, and talking about his Apples in a Dish Palm in Art. Stay tuned for that. Oh, 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 oh. Palms in Art this week features the artist Pierre-Auguste Renoir, who was a French painter. He was born in 1841 and passed in 1919, and he was renowned for his work. Impressionism was brought in by a group of Paris artists, and they were very independent in terms of really kind of shaking things up, much like a cider maker would. They found that they would no longer want to just sit in the studio, but go out into the landscape. However, this particular painting that we are discussing in this week's Palms in Art was essentially indoors, and it's called Apples in a Dish. There are so many Apples in a Dish, essentially still life paintings featuring palms, but this one is really, really lovely. You want to imagine a small round bowl that has white legs and both a white rim and then a deep royal blue center, filled to the brim with apples and on a table. The background is this beautiful, beautiful colorscape, a mottled type of colorscape wall of purples and blues and hues that really accent against the reddish apple. What's interesting about this particular painting is there is an apple in the front that has this uncharacteristic piece that you don't normally see in a still life, primarily because artists chose apples and pears because they didn't decay too quickly. But in this particular painting, Renoir decided to add an apple that had the beginning of decay. It was rather poignant because as he aged, he started to have difficulty with his hands. And often it was said that somebody would have to place the brush in his hand and help him in that way to be able to paint. There you have it, a little bit of a foretelling of what was to come. From my vantage, when I look at this type of painting of palms, and in this case, apples, I know that it is a snapshot of a moment in time, 124 years ago, of apples on a table and in a bowl. It's like holding a bottle of cider that takes a snapshot of an orchard and tastes the terroir that is in that orchard in that one moment of time. That is the beauty of palms in art, and that is why we are on the path of discovering it together. This edition of Palms in Art is brought to you by the Talking Palms, because there's no other fruit that you want to pick when making a cider and perry. If you would like to sponsor Palms in Art, please go to the sponsorship page at ciderchat.com. Oh, 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 oh. And a big tip of the glass to the folks who are patrons of this here podcast via the Cider Chat Patreon page. You too can support it for as little as $3 a month. I mean, you could do a dollar a month if that's all you could afford. And certainly it will go to a good use because, man, oh, man, oh, this podcast is quite a bit to hangle and tangle with. But instead of giving up, we keep on going forward. Just like all the commercial cider makers are trying to make it happen. And speaking of commercial cider makers, you always want to think about Current Cider of Percy, Pennsylvania, and Fishtown in the Philadelphia section of the city, and also Big Fish Cider Company in Monterey, Virginia, and Ramborn Cider Company in Luxembourg, because those cideries support this podcast. And when you get a sip of their savory cider, you too are supporting Cider Chat. So it's a little bit that goes a long way. They are part of the Cider Going Up campaign. And if you are a commercial cidery, please join and help support Cider Chat as it promotes cider and perry around the world. Well, I have to start packing my bags because I'm heading overseas. And look at that. I haven't even had time to tell you about that. But you know you're going to hear about it sooner or later. Good stuff in Ciderville, and I hope that is always so coming your way. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville. Yeehaw!